Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on VBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. One of the greatest Motown and R&B funk artists of all time, the Commodores, Walter Clyde Orange, James Dean Nicholas, and William King, have influenced both artists and young and old and in all genres with their classic songs. The Commodores brand is bigger than ever as they continue to blaze trails all over the world. Two Alabama cities recently honored the music legacy of the Commodores. Tuskegee declared Friday, March 29th, 2019 to be Commodores Day, and Montgomery declared the band members to be honorary residents receiving keys to the city. A celebration was held at the Commodore Museum, the site of the Commodore's former rehearsal and recording studio in Tuskegee. The Commodores were originally formed by a group of college students at Tuskegee Institute just over 50 years ago. It is really great to see the place where the group was born. It still feels like home 50 years later, to the point that where we didn't want to leave, says the Commodores. In 1968, the group was formed while all the members were in college at Tuskegee Institute. After being discovered by Berry Gordy, the Commodores went on to sell over 60 million records for Motown. With hits like Machine Gun and Sail On, the Commodores became proven artists. For five decades, the Commodores have remained a force in the music industry. Commodores aren't just any group. They have staying power. Just like their hit song, Brick House, the Commodores have created a foundation that just won't budge. And don't miss your chance to feature one of the most successful vocal and groups of all time in 2019 and beyond as the Commodores continue to thrill audiences with their greatest hit tour live. And today, please welcome multi-instrumentalist, choreographer, and founding member of Motown Legends, the Commodore, William King, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, William.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. And congratulations. That's quite an honor in Tuskegee and Montgomery, huh?
I got to tell you, man, the sun was shining that day in Tuskegee. I got to tell you. most people don't know what Tuskegee is. It's in the southern part of Alabama. It's near Auburn University, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
And it is a beautiful, beautiful campus and a wonderful place to live. And we were there a very long time ago. I think the first year was 1967 is when I got there. And we actually started the group that February of 1968. And, it was just heaven, you know. When I first got there and I saw all of those young ladies walking across campus, I said, thank you for allowing me to show up and be here. I think this is going to be a wonderful place to spend my next 4 years. It really was. It was a great, great school.
Yeah, it's the first thing you look for in college, right? The women. How good are the women here?
the grades, there are these people that are going there looking for the grades right away. I mean, we get there, but not right away.
That's right. You got to have fun first. That's right. Well, Tuskegee's kind of famous, man. You got the Tuskegee Airmen. You got a lot of famous people came from there.
Well, I got to tell you, man, Booker T. Washington, George Washington.
That's right.
George Washington Carver probably was the creator of most of the things that we see in our house every day that's being used for some material.
That's right. Yep.
And, it's just a place where it was all about creativity, basically. I know it was an agricultural school, but it was founded so that people could find a way to make a living. And that's being creative in many ways. And that's what made it so acceptable and wonderful for us, because it allowed us to be very creative. It allowed us to really plow ahead and go after what we wanted to go after. And even though I got my degree in business management,
mm-hmm.
But I end up making my living as a musician, as an artist. So, it's completely two different things. But the business end helped me in the music world.
Right.
So, is to have a better understanding of how things actually are, and made me want to read things. Because, that most artists don't want to read their contracts, don't want to read, don't want to know what's going on. Just, let me continue to play music. But they go hand in hand. They really do.
Amen to that, man. So many people have gotten ripped off, and especially, even in the 60s, they've had a lot of, CD managers back in the day, and like you said, they didn't even read their contracts. They had no idea. They don't even know where their money was,
That's right.
They just got a check every week or whatever, but, yeah.
That's right. They got a check, either the record company or the manager received the big check.
Exactly.
And, I just pinned it out just enough to keep them happy.
Right.
To be able to continue to work so they could, the managers and the record company could continue to get the big checks. So, it was like that for a very long time.
It was.
It's like that today.
Yep.
And everybody says, well, you have to pay dues. You got to pay your dues to get to a point. And there is some truth to that, but, ripping people off is ripping people off.
Right.
And so you just have to watch what you're doing, whether you're an entertainer or whether you work in the hot dog industry. You got to pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, I really felt sorry for the blues guys, Muddy Waters, and all those guys. Here's a Cadillac, and that was it.
Those songs back in the 40s and the 50s.
Yep.
Most of the black artists, their names are not even on the song.
I know.
Their managers,
Yeah.
The publishing is owned by their managers, or the record company.
That's horrible.
And, and you don't even see their names anywhere near them. And people say, but didn't they write those songs? It would have been incredibly, honest and beautiful of the managers to have done the right thing by the artist, which would have enabled them to last longer. A lot of those artists just burned out.
Exactly.
They had nowhere to go. They died poor as dirt in our church nights at this thing. And so it was a bad thing. But, thank goodness a lot of us now are paying more attention, and we're able to come out a lot more ahead than we have in the past.
Yeah, and the staying power of the Commodores is amazing, man. I mean,
we had such a great time.
Oh yeah, you had to have. You guys were always, having a great time. Every time I saw you guys, the last time I saw you guys, you were at after the Tampa Bay Rays baseball game. You played after the game.
Oh man, yeah. We threw the ball out for that game.
Did you really?
Yeah, and as I started to throw, Walter, the guy that actually takes Rick out, my partner, stepped in my way and my arm clipped his shoulder. And the ball dribbled up the home plate. I was getting ready to throw a fastball about 85 to 90 miles an hour, and my arm hit his shoulder, and the ball went up there. It got it down and made it up there.
You need to do a redo.
It bothered me for 2 or 3 days after that.
That's a shame.
Because it was actually on film and on television everywhere.
Yep.
threw the ball, and it literally just rolled on up there.
You know, I missed the opening pitch there. You know, I was there because, you know, we knew the concert was going to be afterwards. I want to stay for the whole concert. You know, that was a great show, by the way. You guys were probably one of the best after-concert performances because, you know, for a couple of years, they had a lot of big acts after the baseball games.
Oh, well, thank you.
You guys are awesome.
Yeah. We just. Plus, you know what? We played the song that people have heard on the radio,
right.
You know, all their lives.
Yep.
And we try to do them very much the same way that they heard them from the beginning.
Yep.
And it's just a matter of you know, just producing and giving the people what they want to hear. And so that's what we're going to try to do. But it's just been a great life to do that.
Yeah.
To being able to get up on stage and perform the music that we thought about. You know, you should have seen us write that music, man. I tell you, that was it was a lot of fights.
Well, it's a family. It's a family.
Yeah. The thing about brothers, you know, they're brutally honest with each other. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
Like if you came in with the lyrics and they really weren't good, you know, they would let you know right away. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a soft sale. Yeah. You know, everybody had a hard sale, but then they would just tell you, you know, it sucks. You know, you
yeah.
suck. The lyrics suck. Well, you know, go write some more. You know.
What a letdown. That's almost as bad as your pitch.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, man. I mean, you want to tell them where to take that and what to do with it. You know what I mean? I just can't say it on radio. But, yeah, man, there were a bunch of days and a lot of lyrics that had to be rewritten. I don't think we had one set of lyrics that came in and went on the song the way they were the first time around.
Mm.
And, you know, it was just, you know, and like we'd have parts, you know, the bass part of it, horn parts, and, you know, people would have labeled on this, oh, no, we can't put that on the song. You know? So we'd iron it out. But you know what? As you can basically see, they were right.
Yeah.
Because what we came up with
that's right.
really, good because it sold and people loved it and it made people feel incredible. So, and that's the whole idea about the music, is for it to reach people, for it to go inside of them and help them deal with what they're dealing with every day. And I think that's what we've done.
Well, you know, music timelines people's lives. It certainly does mine.
Yeah.
Music, you know, you made a comment about the government. The government, you know, doesn't really care about artists and music. I agree with you, you know, and
yeah.
Music is so important to the world. I mean, I think we could accomplish world peace just with music.
I'm telling you. You know, you know people don't understand, sometimes, some people do, but a lot of people don't really understand, like you said, how music timelines.
That's right.
Where you were, who you are, what happened, you know, and because when you hear a song played from 19... in the 60s or the 70s, you can say, oh, that's a 60s song.
Right.
Or 70s or 75. A lot of people can tell you where they were,
right.
what they did at a certain time when that song came on, or that was the song between him and his first girlfriend he ever had, a 16-year-old girlfriend. You know, it's just, it makes people reminisce. And in a good way.
Yep.
You know, so, and that's the important thing.
Well, you know, even when you remember tragedies, you know, like I remember certain songs around when, you know, like in 68, when, you know, Kennedy got assassinated and Martin Luther King.
Yeah,
I remember the songs at that time. I was listening to the radio when Robert Kennedy got assassinated. I was a, you know, kid listening,
yeah.
but I always fell asleep with the radio. And, you know, I remember the music back then, you know, but
yeah. You relate back to that.
That's right.
All your life.
Exactly.
All your life. You know, people come in and tell us all types of stories about,
right.
you know, how they met their first girlfriend, what happened between them and their father, their mother, their sisters, We've had one young man to come in and tell us, thank you for my life, because my father had been trying to get my mother, romantically, for quite a while, and then he played the song Three Times Related for her, mm-hmm. and I was conceived that night. So he said, without that song, I probably wouldn't be here.
That's funny.
You know?
That's a good one.
There's probably some truth to that, you know what I mean?
That's a good one.
Yeah. So he said he wanted to thank us for his life, and I said, you're so welcome.
Well, you know, I can timeline Commodore's music easily, man. Everyone got caught up in the disco scene, including myself. I was a rocker, but when all the girls are at the discos, you know, you start dressing like John Travolta right away. You know what I mean? and the biggest two songs I remember going out there partying, if you want to go dance, it's Brick House. And that was the number one song. And then the slow dance was Easy.
Yeah.
Those two songs.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, even today, even while we're doing the show, you get one or two people scream out during the middle of the show. My phone just up. You get one or two people scream out during the show, middle of the show. Break out. When you go to break out. So, you know, it's just one of those songs that, you know, it just envelops everyone. And a friend of mine called me one day and said, look, do you mind if we use your song at our wedding? And I said, you can use any of our songs for anything. You know, it's fine. Because he said, we want these people to get up and dance.
Right.
And I actually went to the wedding. And he was right. As soon as they put that song on, everybody.
That's right.
Would sit down. Yeah. Got up. And he got on the dance floor and was singing.
That's got to be a top five wedding song, definitely.
I hear you.
We played that at my daughter's wedding. Yeah. Your wife was the one who coined the Brick House name, right, for the song?
No, she didn't coin it, but she wrote some of the lyrics for it.
Oh, she did? I didn't know she wrote lyrics. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was coined by the guy that just sang, by Walter Orange, by Walter.
Okay.
But I was supposed to write the lyrics.
Right.
Okay? And I went home that night, and I was dead tired. But I had been playing the track on my little cassette player.
Right.
I know some of your listeners don't know what a cassette player is.
That's a shame.
But I was playing it on my little cassette player, my little portable cassette player. Over and over, and just the track. And she had just gotten worn out by it, right? Just tired of hearing it. So she said, please stop playing. If you don't know the melody by now, I said, look, if you can do better, you know, then you're right. And I just kind of laid back and fell asleep with the writing pad, literally, on my chest. And when I woke up, I looked at the pad, and it had all these lyrics written on it. And I thought, man, these are good. I said, man, I haven't been like this in a long time. So I took the lyrics in, and the guys loved them. But, you know, I couldn't tell them that she wrote them at the time because they automatically, you know, it was that time when you want to keep women out the group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You didn't want any of the wives or the girlfriends, anybody. In the group. Okay. No opinions, no nothing, right? So I had to just be hush-hush about it. And they loved him. And he was saying to me, man, you need to write like this all the time. So they loved the lyrics. And I didn't have to rewrite them, nothing.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So, I said, okay, fine. But yeah, she actually did have pen most of the lyrics, yeah.
Huh. And you wrote also Lady, You Bring Me Up, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of those songs that was actually written in the pool house.
Oh, really?
We had this thing set up down in the pool house. I mean, just kind of just playing around and trying to, you know, just come up with something very catchy and And next thing you know, we had Lady, you bring me up. It was one of those songs that took more time than I think any song that I personally have written. I mean, we worked on that song about 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Just that one song. And it was a little difficult to get the melody the way that we wanted it, because it just wasn't right.
Right.
But when we hit it one time by accident, which is the way most songs are written, I think, we knew it right away that this was exactly what we were looking for. Now, whether the people loved it or not, we didn't know, but we knew that we felt great about it. After we got that chorus, the hook line, the way we wanted it, Lady, you bring me up, we said, this is it. And we went with it.
That another top 10 hit with that one.
Yeah, and it's one of those songs today when we play it on stage, people just pop right up out of their seats.
Yeah.
And just start singing the song. And that's what I love too, you know, they know the lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they just start singing right along with you. Now, I tell you, it can backfire on you too, because
right.
One night, JD was singing Three Times a Lady.
Mm-hmm.
And he accidentally sung the second verse first, the first verse second. And people picked up on it, okay? And after the show, we had a lady to come backstage and said, you know you sung second verse first. So I said, you know what? I said, why don't you wait right here? Don't go anywhere. You wait right here. I'll be right back. So I went inside, back in the dressing area, and I told JD, I said, look, there is a lady out there who just wants to tell you how great you are on stage tonight. And how much you really loved, you know, just how you just sung the song tonight. He said, really? He said, well, tell her, thank you. No, you really need to go out there and talk to her. Because she really, you know, she really feels something about you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay. So he goes out there, and I don't go with him. I just watch him. And he doesn't even get, he gets about 5 feet from her. And boy, she likes him to him.
That's awesome.
Like, you wouldn't believe. So he turns around and looks back at me, and I was laughing so hard, my side. But he stood there singing like a man. I mean, she looked
good. That's right.
About him singing, about how he sung the verses wrong.
Hey, that's a dedicated fan, man. That's a dedicated fan.
That's a dedicated fan.
That's,
you know,
right.
She told you that, you know, those verses correct, okay? that was a fun
night. That's great. You know, I fell in love with funk with the horn section way back in, like, the early 70s when I saw the Ohio Players live. And I said, oh, my God, you know, these are musicians. And this is what this is what music is missing nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
The horn section, you know, Tower of Power was another one, you know, way back then that, you know, I really appreciated.
Yeah.
But,
you know, we were all bands.
That's right.
You know, and a band consists of a rhythm section and a horn.
Yep.
Okay? So we were a band. And there were other groups that were just rhythm sections where they just had, you mm-hmm. know, guitar, drums, bass,
yep.
or keyboards. But, you know, it went to Chicago,
yep.
Blood, Sweat, Tears, Commodores, of course. You know, there were a lot of Tower Power. There were a lot of us who had the whole brass, saxophone, trumpet thing going on, and I think used it very well. And we loved it. But we wanted also that power and that strength which the horn brought. And, you know, and it was, and then we started recording in the studio, and at the time it was just me and Richie. Richie Lano played saxophone and I played trumpet.
Right, right.
And so it was just the two of us in there overdubbing the parts, you know, because it was more than one or two trumpet parts and saxophone. So we would just overdub the parts over and over again till we got the harmonies and even just the main melodies that we wanted out of the brass section, the horn section, I should say. And those were fun times too. And then later on, as we got, you know, more developed,
right?
Mm-hmm. We start bringing in other horn players to play with us. You know, because it took less time, to be honest. two horns trying to do a full horn section. And we could bring in the guys, two more, maybe one or two more trumpets, two more, a saxophone, a trombone, you know, a baritone or something, and we could play that song down one or two times and be done with it. And they could go home, we could go home. Instead of being in there all night, over the other part. Like every two or 3 o'clock in the morning. Rhythm section will be home asleep. The two of us would be in the studio over the horn part.
Is the horn your first love? Because I know you play guitar, you play piano, organ, you know, you're a multi-instrumentalist.
My favorite is probably trumpet.
Trumpet?
You know, I play more keyboards now because I write a lot.
Right.
But I spend the vast majority of my time on keyboard. Mm-hmm. Guitar is my worst instrument. You know, I always feel that, you know, I got five fingers and six strings. I'm already behind the eight ball. And I only started that because, on our records we have more than one guitar partner. On stage we only had, you know, a lead guitarist.
Right.
So I started playing so that I could play, the backup, the main chords and the backup chords and stuff, you know. It's called the rhythm guitar. So, and we needed that because that was very dominant, on the record. And so we needed to add that. In the show, just to get that sound, so it sounds just like what the record sounds are like.
Well, they get their money's worth out of you.
Yeah, I know, man. the thing, and they don't care. You know, they have no pity in their heart. They don't care. Just show up, play your part, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Just be a musician. You've been the choreographer of the band as well. That's fascinating. Do you also pick outfits and things like that?
No, as a matter of fact, that's probably my worst quality. the uniform. Now, that's JD. JD is a fashion person.
JD?
He's a fashion guy. You know what
okay.
I mean? You could buy a car and a full wardrobe off of what he spends on a pair of shoes.
I like that. I think that's cool, you know?
I'm telling you, man. I have never seen any shoes. I've never seen anybody say that many shoes in my entire life. It's just a horse jacket, you know, I mean, besides he and my lady, they both go to the store right now.
They shoe shop together.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, I never knew a red stone knit. I tell you what, if you ever see red stones come through your front door, take them back.
Man, I like to see his closet. I like to see his closet. He must have some closet.
Oh man, you really don't.
It's probably a house in itself.
Man,
that's
no, but JD handles that. He is really good at it. I have to admit, he is the guy who takes care of that, and he's very, you know, he's one of those people that's very organized. You know, right. Everything in its place.
That's good.
And,
that's a good thing.
Yeah. Every group needs one of those. But most of the guys just, you know, they're just slouches. You know, they don't really care about anything when it comes to something like that. But they're just very much in line with that, and so he keeps us all in line when it comes to what we wear.
Yeah, JD's he's British, right? Is he from Britain?
He is.
Originally? Yeah.
He is. He's English.
Yeah.
He's been in the United States for a very long time now.
Right.
But we send him back once a year.
Send him back.
Yeah, so we can keep his accent.
Yeah, so, it adds a little flavor.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when he goes back, because, I mean, it's so funny about accents, you know? When people leave certain places like maybe Mississippi or, I don't know, Arkansas or the upper hills of Georgia, upper mountains of Georgia, and They go places. They literally change the way they speak because sometimes people can't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, I mean, matter of fact, Marlon Williams was our keyboard player in the beginning. And Marlon was from Oklahoma, Mississippi. And when Marlon would talk to people, we'd have to translate for him.
That's funny.
Yeah, because people would look at us and say, what did he just say?
What did he say?
What did he say? So then we would translate. Now, granted, we were most of us were from Alabama anyway, so we had our own problems.
Yeah.
but some places are worse than others.
Yep.
You know. And so to keep JD from getting too Americanized, we sent him back every year. We said, look, here's a ticket. Go back home in 2 weeks.
That's hilarious.
And come back. You know. And I even noticed that with the money is because she's from Arkansas, and when she's doing business, she
right.
sounds like she's from New York or
really?
Upstate.
Huh.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
How about that?
Oh yeah. But as soon as she goes home and she's sitting around the table
yep.
with her friend,
yep.
she reverts back, and I find myself trying to figure out what it is they're saying. Because, you know, she gets home and she reverts back to the way she was speaking before.
That's right.
And I think most people do that when they go home. You know, they just revert back to what to where they come from.
You know, my wife's originally from Kentucky, and I find myself when visiting her family talking like them.
See? That's exactly what I'm talking about.
I start saying, yeah, I'm fixing to, and y'all, and... And I'm originally from D.C. <I'm>, you know, they didn't know what to think when I came over. You know, they said this guy's from D.C. You know, I was like foreign. you know who I couldn't understand, William. I interviewed you know Dr. John.
Sure.
Oh man, that Louisiana accent. I had a hard time with him. Man, oh man, a Cajun accent. Wow.
I'm gonna tell you, you know, we come from different places.
Yep.
And your ear is set for a certain type of sound.
Right.
And when you're out of that element, you know, things are different.
Yep. That's true.
And you know, trying to, you know, and because you know something else I learned, in music as well, you use certain words differently that is from certain parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And things mean certain things differently, and things are accepted more, in certain places. And, you know, it's kind of funny about, the country and western, because in country and western music, the lyrics, I think, are better than any of the pop or alternative. I think country western lyrics are better because they say realistically what the artist is trying to get over.
Right.
You know, alternative music is a little bit more intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
And so it comes at it from a whole different perspective. But country and western is right down the middle, shotgun, carol, and the way they use those words is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I oftentimes, when I'm writing, I listen to more country and western music when I'm writing than I do otherwise.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think that they have a way of using words that hit the nail right on the head.
Right, right.
In a very, in a way that makes people understand.
Yep. You know, I know you and Lionel were the closest, right, in the band. And what you were mentioning, the country music thing. It was very interesting when Lionel and Kenny Rogers got together. Because that was a nice partnership. I did like that.
Oh, that, you know, that song that Richie, that, which was, oh God, how can I forget the name of the song? That Richie actually wrote for Kenny, Lady.
Lady, yeah, that was a beautiful song. Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful. Now, yep. That was just one of the songs. club that was fit for the Commodores.
Right.
Okay, just like normal. Like we all go out and write and we bring our songs in.
Yep.
And we collaborate, or we don't collaborate, or we just bring them in a solo, or it's two of us, or six of us, or four of us, whatever. And so that was one of the bitches written on his own. He brought it in, like three times a lady. And so when he brought the song in, and we were going to have it on our next album.
Mm-hmm.
And our producer at the time, Dan Carmichael, said, right. No, he didn't want to use the song because it was too much like Three Times and Easy and mm-hmm. some other songs we had done.
Yep.
And he wanted to kind of get away from that. And I was thinking, why would you want to get away from a hit song?
Exactly.
Because this is a hit song. All right, and then the Commodores, we didn't care who wrote the song. Mm-hmm. We thought it was a hit. We wanted it. Okay, so it was like going against what we actually thought, to turn our back on a song that was already in the fold. You know, the family had written the song. Someone in the family had the song ready for us. Why would we not do that song? We didn't do it.
How did it end up with Kenny?
How did we get hooked up with Kenny?
No, how did the song end up with Kenny? How did that Kenny did it instead of you guys?
Well, what happened was is that Kenny actually had his management call our management so he could meet us.
Okay.
Because he had heard some of the music we had done.
Right.
And he wanted some of the music for himself.
Right.
Okay. So we said, sure, So we all got there. He actually came to Tuskegee, Alabama. Came to our studio there. Mm-hmm. We sat in the studio and talked. And we played music for him and we sang different songs.
Right.
And we just had a great time together.
Yeah.
And that's how we got our relationship started.
Yep.
He actually came to Tuskegee to see us. So when that song was turned down by our, at that time, co-producer, James Carmichael, and he just said, well, hey, this is good for Kenny. So that's how Kenny got the song. It was turned down by us, basically. And Kenny got the song, mm-hmm. and the song went through the roof.
It did.
Went through the roof, yeah.
Yeah, it did.
And the irony in that was, is that that album that song was supposed to go on was the worst selling album that we had, and ever had.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you?
So we turned down something that really cost us dearly.
Are you okay with Lionel now?
You know, the answer to that is yes. But I was okay with him.
Uh huh.
When he left.
Right.
Because my position, and not only mine, a couple other guys in that position was, but everybody's grown in here. Okay.
Yep.
Now I didn't like it. You know, look, I thought we were all going to die together. You
right.
know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, that we'd live to 110 and one day we'd all walk to the studio and just all keel over. You know? Because we spent our lives together.
Yep.
We've been together, I don't know, 17, 18 years at the time that you left.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we had gone to New York City together in a van with no spare tire.
Right.
You know, we drive about 50 miles and the tires would pop. And then we'd have to get out and push it down the highway, down the freeway by hand until we got to a gas station.
Wow.
Get it fixed, then roll it all the way back from the gas station, back down the freeway, and put it on the truck again. Okay, on the van again. And then drive another 50 or 60, and then it would pop. Another one would pop. Mm. And then we'd
wow.
That's how we got to where we were going.
That's paying your dues.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, we all slept in one hotel room at a time.
Wow.
You know, if you just lay across the bed on the floor, you know. it was a great time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There wasn't any time
yep.
that we felt that it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean. I mean, we were having a blast. So you form a camaraderie and a love for each other. Look, we spent more time together as the Commodores than we did with our wives.
That's right. That's true.
It is.
That is true. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, it was all about taking care of each other.
Yeah.
There wasn't one thing that another guy in the band needed that he didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because if he needed tires for his car, we'd all just put in money to get tires for his car.
Right.
If he needs a payment for his rent, we all just paid his rent.
Right.
It wasn't about paying you back. We didn't have, you know, like a book that we kept where so-and-so got, you know, $150 more than he did this week. We didn't do that.
Right.
We just took care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt that no one would try to take advantage of that situation, because that just wasn't us. So yeah, so when Richie said that he was going to leave, yeah, it rubbed us all the wrong way. But, you know what, we were grown men.
Mm-hmm.
We had families, you know, and so, it's that old expression, you know, if you don't want to be here, we don't want you here.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's not true. We really didn't want him here, even though he didn't want to be here.
Yeah.
But we knew that was a major change for the Commodores.
Yeah.
Major.
Yeah.
Okay, and we knew we were going to have problems with promoters and buyers and record companies and commercials and all the things that we were doing. Because the face that they all recognized more than anybody else in the group was Richie.
Yeah. You know, which is a shame. You know, I mean, a lot of people do that to a lot of bands, and that hurts them. You know, you can't just pick one person out of the band and say that's the leader. That, you know, here's an example. I heard you like Genesis, the band Genesis.
That's right.
Peter Gabriel was always the face, and they had they had the same issue until Collins, said he sounded a lot like Peter Gabriel, his voice, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody thought he was the face. And I talked to, the guitar player, but, you know,
it escapes me too, but go ahead.
Yeah, but he says the same thing. I mean, you know, they everybody thought, you know, he was the face, and, you know, you get a little bitter about that, you know, because,
Well, it's human nature.
Yeah, it's human nature, right.
It's human nature.
Right.
And but you got to live through it.
Yep.
Okay? Because, you know, that once someone reaches success that usually those lead singles reach, then they start thinking about the fact that, you know, well, you know, for every dollar I make is split so many ways, however many people in the group, and that whole dollar can be mine. And they start thinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And money makes a difference. So, you know, I understood that. I think we all understood that. Mm-hmm. I speak for just for myself, not those guys.
Right.
Speak for themselves. But, you know, for me, I knew exactly what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, if that was his decision, then, you know, we had to move on.
Yeah.
And, I hated it. I truly hated it. It wasn't anything about that whole time during that period that was good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were actually fighting for our life.
Right.
And I remember when we had, it didn't really hit me really hard until once we were in the airport. We were coming back from Europe. And there was a magazine on the stand that had our silhouette on it with question marks on it.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Man.
Okay. And, I'm sorry I didn't buy that magazine at the time. I should have.
Yeah.
Because I don't even remember which one it was now. But anyway, it had, question marks in our silhouettes. And it just made me so angry. Actually, it took me a good while to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, probably a year or so. Because that would always enter my mind and I would think, oh my God, this is what people think. Because I know that because I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we had to find our way back. But you know what? The good news was, we had a hit album with Night Shift.
Night Shift, right.
Okay. Yeah. And bam. You know, and so people would come back and say, oh, I knew you could do it.
Yep.
You know, people start trying to climb back on the ship that had jumped off the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't having it. He jumped over. If you can't swim, I'm sorry.
Did Lionel go to the key ceremony in Alabama?
No, he wasn't there.
He wasn't there, huh?
He wasn't there.
Yeah, he should have been there. He should have been there.
But he was invited. He was invited. Look, we always, you know, like our bass player, Ron LaFred, he left in 1986. in New Zealand, and he married her and mm-hmm. moved to New Zealand and retired, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, I get it. You know, guys, you know, look, he made a lot of money, and so he could, you know, do what he wanted to do, and life had changed for him. But he came back for that. He came from New Zealand to Tuskegee, Alabama, for that ceremony that day.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He came back. Yeah. So I wish that she had shown up as well. I really wish she had. It would be good to see him. But, you know, and when we do run into each other, we talk just like we never left.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We start reminiscing and talking about the good old days, and we just laugh and just, you know, the time passed. The last time we were together, I think we probably spent 4 hours together.
Huh.
About 4 hours.
Wow.
We didn't mean to. You know what I mean? We didn't mean to, but we just started talking, and then we said, well, let's go to lunch.
Yep.
Then we left lunch, and then he said, well, let me show you something, and we went to see something he wanted me to see, mm-hmm. and then we went back over to another place, and then we just rode down, we were riding in the car. It was about four hours or something like that.
Hey, friends are still friends, man, you know?
Yeah.
Friends are still friends.
Yeah, but we have so much.
Yeah.
You know, we have so much, and you can't get to it in a few minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we could have spent another 4 hours together. So, you know, it's always good to see any of the guys
sure.
that were the Commodores at one time and
yep.
are no longer as well as it is to be with the guys that are still here.
Well, it's happened to everybody. I mean, the Beatles, Temptations, I mean, the list goes on, you know, somebody leaves.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah. No, and it's always sad to the fans.
Right. It is sad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always sad, you know, And I had always hoped that we could do a reunion tour.
That would be great. That would be great.
Yeah.
I don't see why not.
Yeah,
I don't see why not.
We could get together, but.
Yeah.
But the holdup has always been Richie. You
yeah.
know, he just, everybody signed on, but he always says, let me think about it. I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it, you know. And so I don't, recently, the first part of the year, we had a couple of promoters come to us and say, look, we'd like to do a reunion trip.
Yeah.
I said, look, here's the deal. You don't have to talk to me. You need to, if you can get Richie on board, all you got to do is show me that he's on board.
Right.
Or Richie call me and tell me, hey, man, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need to call me. Because I'm good for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd love to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, and I think that the rest of the guys would too. But, you know, it's one of those things where we need everybody.
Well, the fans want it. The fans definitely want it.
Well, yeah, you know, look, yeah. if you're in love with the solo and Easy and Three Times, you know, you want to see
That's right.
Tommy play those solos, you know.
Yep.
If you are in love with the horns or breakouts, you like to see the guys who played me and Richie
mm-hmm.
play those horn parts again.
Right.
I mean, people remember who did what. You know, not everybody remembers everything, but I'm amazed by the people who remember certain things about what went on
mm-hmm.
through our careers. You know, and they come to see those things. We had a lady come to our show the first of the end of the year. I think it was like November somewhere in there of last year. And she had driven, she and her husband had driven a couple of hours to come to the show.
Right.
And she was from the Philippines. And we had a song that was big over there called The Bump.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in 1974, 75. Okay?
Right.
She came to our show, but we didn't play The Bump. Because it's not in our show list anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We took that out about 1978, probably somewhere in there.
Yep.
So it's no longer in the show list. But she didn't know that, and she came to our show in the Philippines where we broke the Beatles' attendance record. It's called the Aeronautical Coliseum.
Sure.
She was there. She probably was about 10 or 12 or whatever at the time. And she remembered that song, and she loved that song, and she bought that came to hear that song. And somehow she made her way backstage, right where the door was. And as we were leaving, you know, we had people standing there waving and saying goodbye, and just sticking their hands out for us to touch them. And she said, "I came from the Philippines to hear the bump."
Jeez.
So, and she got my hand, by the way, okay? So that I beat that just to shake. So she is holding my hand. You know, she got this death grip on it. And I said, "Miss, I am so sorry." And she said, "You know, at least sing a couple of bars. I got to get something for the bump." And I'm thinking to myself, "Lord, I'm ready. I don't remember the chord. I don't remember the lyrics to this song. I remember the song, but it would take me a few minutes to think, you know what I mean?" But you gotta remember that. This was 1970.
Yep.
574, somewhere
right,
in there.
Right.
And this is 20 what? Okay? Not 19 anything. 20 something. And I thought, "Lord, there's no way in the world I can remember those lyrics." So Walter is there with me, and he says, and he literally, he starts off singing the song.
Really?
Yeah. And I was so grateful. I was so
relieved. He bailed you out, man.
He bailed me out, man. He started singing the song, and then it started coming back to me a little bit. So the two of us standing there, and we were kind of like going through this song a little bit, and this lady, and she's bobbing back and forth, you know, bobbing the standing there looking at him. And nobody else in the whole crowd knew the song. Everyone trying to sing the song that neither one of us, Walter or I, really knew. But we were trying to get through it.
That's funny.
Oh, God.
That's funny.
But, yeah, but people, you know, they come to that show to hear certain songs.
That's right.
Whether they are, you know, whether they are the star cut off of it, the hit songs, or whether they are the side cut. You know, side cut is just... We used to call them fillers, but, you know, side cuts on an album,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you'd have 10 to 12 songs on an album, but only maybe two or three or four of them were hit.
Yep.
And the rest of them were what we call side songs. But, yeah, but that was a hit for her, so.
Well, here's another timeline for me. You know, I told you I was in the discos, you know, with Brick House and Easy and all that, but I was on the air. I was a top 40 DJ. And I was spinning Sail On and Still back in, this was back in what, 79 or something like that. And,
yeah.
I was spinning records for the Commodores.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And I tell you that, did you know Sail On was our country and western song?
It sounded country and western when it first came out. And I told people at the station and they thought I was crazy.
That was our country and western. Ken Rogers instigated that song.
Really?
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, he instigated that song. And so what we did was, we called ourselves doing a country and western song. And the R&B stations that really were attacking us, literally, they were saying, what you guys think you're doing? You know, you should be trying to do some country and western. You're R&B, or at most pop, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, why can't we do whatever we want to
exactly,
do?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, but it started going up the country western charts, right?
Yep.
And once it started going up the country western charts, it was like the R&B charts. But, oh, no, we can't let them have a Commodore. So we're going to play it too. So we had it going up the R&B and the country western charts and the pop charts all at the same time.
That's incredible. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a good band. Such a great band, you know? I gotta mention, you got the Ultimate Disco Cruise in 2020. Is that sold out yet?
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
Those things sell out so fast, man.
Yeah, I don't know. We did a Soul Train Cruise.
Right, I remember that one.
Two years ago.
Yep.
Maybe. And that one was sold out, but the problem with that one was the boat broke down.
Did it really?
the ship broke down.
Holy cow. What happened? Did they get
the motor. One of the engines, you know, I guess they got two of them, one on each side.
Right.
One of them went out, so they had to send a crew in to try to fix it. So we were on some island.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we actually performed two nights. And then we got off the ship, caught a plane, and went home. We were supposed to be on the ship for like 8 days.
These cruises, but man, these music cruises.
Yeah, but we were only on it for two days, I think.
Only 2 days? Well, this one in 2020, you got you guys, Casey and the Sunshine Band, the Jacksons, Pointer Sisters, Sister Sledge, Heatwave, Anita Ward, Ring My Bell, and George McRae, Maxie Nightingale, Harold Melvin's Blue Notes. What a lineup. Jeez.
I hope they don't feel open. We don't feel live when it comes. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I didn't say that out loud, did I?
Yeah, you did. You did.
I'm sorry, I was thinking it, but I didn't know it really came out of my mouth.
It's funny. You got some other shows coming. I want to promote some of your shows. You got the Atlantis Casino in Nevada, May 24th. You're going to be in Temecula, California.
Temecula.
Yeah. In June 1st. Which is cool. You got some shows that you're going to be playing with the Isley Brothers at the Wisconsin State Fair with the Isley Brothers. And on the 25th in San Diego, you're going to be with the OJs. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, and it's so much fun playing with them, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we sit backstage and laugh half the time. We just, you know, again, you know, just talking about old times and all the artists that we know.
Right.
And, you know, and the times we played with, you know, the Rolling Stones and TV.
I didn't know you guys played with the Stones, you know?
We did.
Yeah,
we did, like, Washington, D.C., Baltimore.
Right.
Philly. You know, the East Coast.
Yep.
So, yeah. It was, and I tell you what, Mick was so funny because he would say to us, I don't want you to go on until I get there. Yeah. Because I want to see the show. And we said, well, Mick, we're going at 8 o'clock.
Right.
Okay. He said, well, I'll be there by 8 o'clock. Oh, Lord, I'm because, you know, look, we had to go on at 8 o'clock. Just the promoter, you know, it was like, if 8 o'clock had come, it was at your stage.
Right.
Okay, this is not a show where you go on 8:10, 8:12.
Right.
You know, 8:20. No. It's punctual, bam, you know. And, which is what we try to do. You know, we've always been that way. And, so, you know, we had to wait. So the first time he said it to us, we were backstage and we were ready to go on, but he hadn't shown up yet. It was like 15 minutes to 8, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he got there about 5 minutes to 8 or something.
Uh-huh.
And he came in and closed the door in the dress room and started talking.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking down the time. I'm going, oh, Lord.
That's funny.
Now, you know, who doesn't want Mick Jagger to come in and talk to him? You know,
jeez. And the Stones are normally
now.
The Stones, you know, I mean? Are normally late too. You know, I saw them in D.C. They're always late.
So I'm thinking to myself, you know, he's gonna be on the town here show though, because he's already here. But we are late. But anyway, but then the promoter of Dubai, the guy that before came in, he said, "Look, hey, you gotta get on stage." And we said, "Mick, we gotta go, man." He said, "All right, we'll talk afterwards." And then, you know, so. But he would come down sometimes during the day when we have sound check and we just, you know, just talk about nothing, just have a good time. And so was the rest of the band. You know, they were all really, really good people.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the artists that we are all around are really good people, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Stevie, it's not a better person than Stevie Wonder.
Oh, man. I would love to interview Stevie, you know. He's an icon, you know.
Yeah, he's an icon. Yeah. He's the best. Show one time with Stevie.
Yeah.
It was an outdoor show. Probably had like, don't know, 50,000 people out in that stadium. It was like a football field kind of thing. So it was tons of people there. And so we went on, and actually Stevie was going on right after us, okay? So we went on and did the show. When we came out, we hustled back because we wanted to see Stevie's show, to change clothes and come out to the side of the stage. And Stevie's brother is always with him. And so Stevie had this routine where he would play and stand up from his keyboard and take, I don't know, one or two steps or whatever away and clap his hands and get people involved and
right,
sit back
right.
down to his keyboard.
Right.
But at this particular time, he took too many steps away from his keyboard.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And we all saw him do it. And we were back there and we went, oh, shit. You know, so we looked over for his brother, and his brother wasn't there. Something, his brother had left and gone backstage.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man. And we were going, okay, do we run out there and, you know, get him? Or, you know, what do we do now? You know what I mean? But his brother, sure, somebody called his brother, I guess, and he ran out and got Steve in. You know, got him back to the keyboard, but you know, things like that happen all the time, and out there in showbiz, man. But we just have such a great time with the people out there. It's like the OJs, what an incredible guy!
Yeah,
just really, really, really great guys, and the Osleys now, it's just so much fun out there with some of the guys.
Yeah, some of
just do it because 95% of our shows are just But when we do shows together, I mean, we did a couple of shows with the Jacksons.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
You toured with the Jacksons.
Shows with the Jacksons.
Those were the days, though, man. You know, when you had the R&B bands that, you know, so polished, you know, they were so smooth, the dancing, the moves, you know. I mean, there's nothing better, you know. I mean, you not only Motown, but just everything that was happening in the 70s, early 70s and, you know, mid 70s.
Right. It was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
The music was so good.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, like James Taylor, Cal King, and in the alternative or pop world, as you might call it. The music was so good.
Right.
You know, we had Ohio Players and, like I said, Earth, Wind & Fire. And the Gang.
Yep.
You know, it was just, everything was just popping. Everybody was trying to outdo everybody else.
Exactly. And they look so sharp, you know. It's not like a guy in a t-shirt with his back towards the audience, you know. You know, it was a show.
I know. It's and you know what? The musicianship back then was so
incredible. Good. Incredible.
It was so good. And but you know now, you know, we don't have bands anymore.
No.
You know, I think Bruno Mars. It's the only artist I can think of. It may be somebody else. But he's the only one I know that has a band on the road with it.
It's sad. Very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I miss those days
and I miss
a lot. You know who I had on my show last week? Dennis Coffey.
Oh, my God.
Funk Brothers.
Yes.
You know, that's...
How did you get him on there? What happened?
I called him up, and he said, okay, you know, because, yeah, I'm a big fan of Motown and R&B, big time. You know, coming from D.C., you have to be, and I was born in Baltimore. I was raised in Baltimore, so, you know, we were like kind of like a hub, like Philly, you know, like New York and Detroit, you know, we were kind of like that. But,
well, you know, most people don't realize the contribution they made.
That's right.
To the sound, the music.
Exactly. Them and the Wrecking Crew, you know, all those guys, you know, they were behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah, you know, like the boys down in Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Uh-huh, right.
You know?
Muscle Shoals, yeah.
Muscle Shoals Horn.
That's right.
You know, I mean, everybody wanted to go down there to record. You know, you had Aretha Franklin go down there. We went down there. The Rolling Stones were down there. I mean, I can't imagine. Everybody wants to go in that one room. There was one room down at Mother's Shore that the sound was unbelievably incredible. And so everybody wanted that sound, the Mother's Shore sound, it was called.
You when you were at Motown, that was the office in L.A., right? I mean, wasn't that?
We were in L.A.
L.A., yeah.
In L.A.
Yeah.
They actually did go out to Detroit.
Right.
On one occasion to record something. I even remember what it was now. In that little studio, and that was a little studio. And all the recording mechanisms were on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't in a machine. They were literally up into the wall.
Was that Hitsville? Was that at Hitsville? Hitsville, USA?
Yeah. It's a little bit of house, man.
You
walk in, just go down like three rows of steps into the music room.
Isn't that amazing? All that music came out of that little house. It's amazing.
Let me tell you though, it was 24 hours a day, too. I got to tell you, man, they were putting it out.
That's crazy.
They were putting it out. And a lot of people don't know, but a lot of those groups, Temptations, Four Tops, the Miracles, you know, they all sang together. Mm-hmm. You know, they needed to help with something. They all just joined in, man. It was a family. That's how Motown became Motown.
Yeah.
It really was a family.
Yeah.
It really was good. But, you know, I really got to respect, Barry Gordy.
Because
he had a great year.
Yeah, but he did.
It was no accident.
Yeah.
That the groups that he chose, were such a success. I mean, you know, it's hard for anybody to get that many groups at any time, period of time. But he was able to hear it and know that they had what it took.
Yep.
And he did a great job.
He was a pioneer, man. Just like...
He was a pioneer.
Yeah, we don't have many of those guys anymore, you know?
Nah. Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm sure he was going after some money, too. But it was a desire and a need he had within himself to do it.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was more than money, you know. That's the problem today. People get into show business because they think they're going to make a lot of money.
Right.
Okay. And it's like anything else, you know. You get into it because that's what you're into. You know, that's what your heart is. And if the money comes, then great. But regardless, this is what you would do regardless of anything else. And I think that's the way it was at Motown. That the people that were there because that was what they wanted to do. Nothing else. This is it. Come, whether it goes big, whether it goes small, it doesn't matter. This is what we're going to do. And it was huge. Absolutely just sensational.
They cared about the music. They loved the music. And that's why
they cared about it.
That's why they did it. That's why they did it. Yep. Well, I don't have anything else for you. Is there anything else you want to promote or talk about?
No, I'm good, man. It's just very nice talking to you.
Good talking to you, too, man.
I hope you got what you needed.
I did.
I'm always here.
I tell you, keep in touch. Commodores are on tour. You got the big disco thing in 2020. Those things sell out like a year ahead of time, I know, because I've been trying to get on
one. Like that soul.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll talk to Tampa Bay Rays, see if they'll give you another shot. That's a shame.
Yeah. They think of the season 90 mile an hour speedball fastball, man. Come on.
You got ripped off, man.
Oh, Lord.
Well, William, thank you for being on the show, man.
I had a good time laughing with you today. I appreciate it.
Me too. And all the incredible music you've given us through the years and continue to bring. And maybe there'll be a new album coming out soon. Who knows, right?
Actually, we are looking at that, right?
Good.
As a matter of fact.
Good. We need to hear some new music from the Commodores.
Thank you very much.
All right, William. Take care, man.
All right. Good day now. Bye-bye
now. For more information about the Commodores, visit www.commodoreslive.com and www.facebook.com/The Commodores. Very special thanks to the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR for arranging this interview with William King. And, of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. And if you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It is real news, people. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business. Available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on PBS Radio, Station 1.